All right, the first presentation this afternoon is by David Donovan. David was named the president of the Association for Maximum Service Television, MSTV, on July 1st of 2001. Founded in 1956, MSTV is a national association of over 430 local television stations dedicated to promoting technical quality of free, local, over-the-air television service, and has taken a leading role in the transition to digital television service. David has nearly 20 years of broadcast regulatory and policy experience. In a past life, he was the mass media legal advisor for the Honorable James H. Quello, an FCC commissioner. David also was a legal advisor to the Mass Media Bureau Chief and interim mass media advisor to Commissioner Patricia Diaz-Dennis. David came to the commission from Boston, Massachusetts, where he was in private law before then. He is also served as a law clerk for the Judicial Council of Massachusetts. So if you haven't picked up by now, David's a lawyer. That's not a bad thing. I have to tell you a personal story. When I was asked to join the MSTV engineering committee, you noticed when we got there that David was sitting in on all of our meetings. And this is a number of years ago. And as time went by, the engineers, or the good side of it is that David began to understand how engineers thought and talked. And that was a good thing. We had to have that happen. The scary thing is the engineers began to understand how lawyers thought and talked. And that still scares me to this day. But it was a great learning experience. Ladies and gentlemen, David Donovan.
I'm a lawyer. I'm from Washington, and I'm here to help you. We're all in trouble. I want to thank Chuck and the Wisconsin broadcasters for allowing me to speak with you this afternoon. To talk about the broadband plan, and I want to try to interweave a little bit of politics and some engineering to try to give you a flavor for where it is and where it's going, and hopefully afterwards to answer some questions. As you may or may not know, MSTV has been around since 1956. We've been the leading technical arm of the television broadcast industry. We did a lot of the digital allotment planning, the channel selection process. I am just very fortunate to work with two very gifted engineers, Victor Towle, who is just, in my opinion, one of the smartest guys on the planet, has done a terrific job for us, and also Bruce Franca, who is a former chief engineer of the Federal Communications Commission. So it's a small team, but it's a pretty good team. And we're there in Washington literally to represent broadcasters on the technical side of issues. So as we go forward in moving into the broadcast spectrum era, just by way of background, we have seen a lot of debate and a lot of discussion over the last, year or so. And a lot of it is focused on, who is the head of this new broadband task force? Why is he coming after broadcasters? What's this going to mean for our future? I think one thing that you really have to understand is that this broadband initiative has support on both sides of the political aisle. This just isn't a Democratic function. I mean, it came to fruition under a Democratic administration that is very closely connected with the Silicon Valley types who want access to spectrum. But I think both sides of the aisle really view this as an important activity. And we have spectrum that they believe is beachfront and that they believe is exceedingly important. In essence, the broadband plan has been compared to, in many Washington policy circles, is a building of the national highway system. And there is a consensus to do that. They believe that it will expand competition, both in urban, but also in rural areas, in terms of greater access to information. It's viewed as a basic infrastructure tool that will facilitate and stimulate economic activity. And as we all know, in the recession that we're all living in right now, anything that can stimulate that activity will garner political support. And so in many respects, this is a tidal wave in terms of using spectrum. And moreover, it's not just communication systems. There are a number of non-communications-based services out there that want to use spectrum. and they're all coveting our spectrum. I mean, in many sense, it's spectrum lust. Now, that may not get you into heaven, but the bottom line is that other entities are really searching for our spectrum as well. So it's viewed as a key to the economic recovery. And while there is a wireline component to this, the wireless component has been the driving force. In particular, it's viewed as the next generation of Americans will rely more heavily on wireless communication systems and other systems than they have in the past. So, stepping back from the background, this is not just simply a Democratic thing. This really is a thing, an issue that has bipartisan support in Washington. Now, there are three players, and what I want to do with this discussion today is talk about three things. I want to talk about the players that are involved in this in Washington, and then I want to get into some of the technical aspects with it. So we'll get into the impact a little bit later, but let me just give you the lay of the land. As we all know, the FCC essentially has set out a national broadband plan. That plan was not adopted by the FCC commissioners themselves, by the way, but it was released by the commission. And while it was not specifically voted on by the commission, it has become the mantra, the blueprint for policy actions on a going-forward basis. They want to claim 500 megahertz of spectrum in 10 years, 300 megahertz of spectrum in 5 years. And they also want to get 120 megahertz of spectrum. This is under the broadband plan from the broadcast industry. Now, the reason is because we exist below 3 gigs. It's the beachfront. The irony is that broadcasters only use exclusively about 5% of that beachfront spectrum. In the major markets, which we share with Land Mobile and Police and Safety on channels 14 to 20, when you add it all up, we use anywhere between 5 and 8%. So we're not the major players on the beach, but nonetheless, we're viewed as the targets to go after. And largely, we're viewed as the targets to go after because of the way the system has been allocated. As you know, and we've all suffered, not suffered with, but lived by, frankly, is the distance separations between co and adjacent channels, in particular, has left the impression that there are a lot of vacant channels in the broadcast band that have been used and utilized. You saw that in the TV white spaces where folks said, oh, let's plop new services on those, quote, vacant channels. In this instance, the theory is, well, maybe we can squeeze these guys closer together. I'll get to the technical impact of that later on. But essentially, the commission's objective here is to get spectrum in major markets. All of this is geared towards getting spectrum in essentially the Boston to Washington corridor out in the West Coast. For large swaths of America, there is plenty of spectrum to do wireless broadband systems. You could do it on television channels with proper engineering. The Canadian government has used television channels for wireless broadband systems under a license regime for quite some time. So, but this really is a large market phenomenon. But it will affect everyone nationwide, including stations in small markets, because the government, as we'll get into, wants to clear nationwide blocks of spectrum. And if they want to clear a channel in New York City and they want a nationwide clearance, it will affect a station in a smaller market as well. So that's what the FCC wants. What the FCC is about to do on November 30th is issue a notice of proposed rulemaking that's going to do a couple of things. First, it's going to lift the technical limits to allow spectrum to be used by wireless broadbands. It's setting the groundwork for sharing. And this is, right now, we're the only ones who can use our spectrum for the most part. This now will allow wireless broadband systems to use our spectrum. The second thing is that it'll change the licensing framework now to allow separate licenses for individual channels. Right now, for example, Channel 9 has one single broadcast channel. What the commission is proposing is to allow multiple licenses to use that same channel. So you may have two or three licensed entities using that channel. That's what's being proposed here. They want to expand the experimental licensing approach to help facilitate investment. They are also going to issue a notice that deals with opportunistic uses of spectrum. In effect, right now, broadcasters can't play very hard in the secondary markets for spectrum. We can do our ancillary and supplemental services. We can do multicasting. But if you wanted to lease your spectrum to the phone company to do other things, right now you're precluded. They're going to open up a proceeding saying, hey, maybe everybody, not just broadcasters, but everybody should be able to use more opportunistic uses of spectrum. The final thing is, and the report was just released, is that they're looking at creating the justification for why spectrum has to be taken. And their models believe that there are going to be significant need for mobile broadband uses as we go forward. Now, I apologize. I didn't realize the room was going to be this big. But let me just, I'll just refer you to the last line, because this is really the summary chart of the report, which says in 2009, right now, in terms of spectrum that's needed for mobile broadband, we have an excess capacity of about 377 megahertz. Where they believe is that by 2013, between 2012 and 2013, that will flip. The demand for video and for wireless broadband will increase to the point where suddenly there will be a deficit. And they're contemplating that there will be a net deficiency of spectrum for wireless broadband services by about 275 megahertz by the year 2014. This is all based to justify the policy on a going-forward basis. There are reasons, and I'll get into them, why broadcasters really are part of this ecosystem and can help solve this problem. But right now, this is the latest numbers from the FCC. Now, you've seen where the FCC is, National Broadband Plan. They're starting the rulemakings to get the process going. The administration has also weighed in. And as you know, President Obama is frankly a high-tech president and is very much interested in these issues. I sit on the Department of Commerce's Spectrum Management Advisory Council, where most people say, no, we're going to take your spectrum anyway. But in those debates, the administration has weighed in. And the thing is that they, too, want 500 megahertz of spectrum. They have made it very clear that they want that. And they want the federal government to also look at how much spectrum it can cough up. And last week, the NTIA issued a report indicating that they can find 115 megahertz of spectrum. Great. Does that mean that they won't take ours? No. Why? Most of that spectrum is above the 3 gigahertz band. It's above the beachfront. Now, having been in government, and Larry Strickland, who's head of NTIA, I can imagine what those meetings went. You sit down. The guy sitting across from you has a hat with scrambled eggs on his brim and missiles in his pocket, and he says, I'm not giving it up. It's a national security issue. And so those internal fights are just always tough. I think our objectives has to be is to drill down a little bit more to see whether or not more government spectrum in the, quote, beachfront area can be turned over. But for now, the fact that NTIA has come up and saying that they can find 115 megahertz of spectrum, I don't think is going to take a lot of pressure off us at this point. Now, what's important about the administration is that the administration has not selected a number of how much spectrum they want to get from us. They want it, but they hadn't set the 120 megahertz bar. They're willing to be flexible on that, and that will become very important as we go forward. But it's clear that they're going to obtain an active role in obtaining spectrum. I also want to make it very clear that even after the election next week, in which there may be a flip in the House, perhaps even in the Senate, I do not expect this spectrum issue to go away for a number of reasons. If you look at the folks who are pushing legislation regarding spectrum on Capitol Hill, it is bipartisan. Now, essentially what this legislation does is as follows. The Commission's way to facilitate spectrum, or to get us to turn in our spectrum, is to hold what we call an incentive auction. Now, I'll get into what that means. But they don't have the authority to say, I will take money from the Treasury and give it to you if you want to turn in your spectrum, or give it to you if you want to suddenly say, these two stations will start sharing channels. They need legislation to do that. These are the bills that are now floating around in Congress right now. The top is a Kerry Snow, sponsored by John Kerry and Olympia Snow, bipartisan. It would establish a voluntary incentive auction for broadcasters. The thing that we don't like about it is it imposes spectrum fees. What it does, it would give the FCC the authority to use spectrum fees as a spectrum management tool. We all know what that means. You don't turn in your spectrum or you don't share, we're going to up your fees. We have, as an industry, we have significant problems with that approach. Congressman Markey, former telecom chairman, a subcommittee chairman, has introduced a bill. He, too, would create incentive auctions. But if you read his bill carefully, it's not necessarily voluntary. And, of course, our concerns are if this is going to move forward at all, it has to be on a voluntary basis. Current subcommittee, telecom subcommittee chairman Rick Boucher and his Republican counterpart Cliff Stearns have put in a bill that the broadcast industry generally supports. And essentially what it says is that it will give the FCC the authority to conduct a voluntary auction, and no spectrum fees would be part of this process. You cannot indirectly or directly force a broadcaster to turn in their channel. And it gives the commission authority to say, if you want to turn in your channel, the commission will have the authority now to make payments directly to you. Senate side. I talked about the Kerry Snow bill, but the Rockefeller bill on the Senate side is one that we support. Again, it establishes voluntary auctions, and it also prohibits or would prohibit the commission from using spectrum fees as a spectrum management tool. Those bills, I think, are really important. And that fight is not fight. That debate, that discussion is going to occur starting in January with the next Congress. And it will be the number one telecom issue that they have to deal with. Okay. So what are all these incentive auctions that we're talking about? What's the commission have in mind? The next couple of slides were taken from an economist that works at the FCC who's in charge of setting up the auctions. I probably won't do them justice, but I want to just walk you through at least what they have in mind. Essentially, a sequential incentive auction. And this would work this way. You would have broadcasters who would make a decision which would have, I would set a binding offer to sell. This is my reserve price. Then once that is established, they would go to the buyer side, create a demand curve. How much would folks pay to buy that spectrum? They would then determine the amount of spectrum they want to be cleared and adjust the price accordingly. And essentially, broadcasters then would be repacked. So that's one approach. That's a sequential approach. The next approach would be a double-sided auction. Instead of doing it sequentially, you open up a window, and all this happens all at once. It's far more complex to do it that way, but they're looking at that. Again, this is not cast in concrete. These are the ideas that are floating around right now at the commission. So let's look at the incentive auction sequential approach. The first is you make your binding offer, your voluntary, how much you would give to turn in your spectrum. In essence, creating the supply side. What's the reserve price that your guys would want to sell? Now, what does all that mean realistically? Let's take two stations, Station A and Station B. Station B wants to get out of the market altogether. So Station B would say, okay, I quit. I want to participate. I'd sell out for $100. I know it's a lot more, but I'm a lawyer. I have to make the math easy. So I want to sell out for $100. Well, but I still want to kind of stay in the business. So what do? I could either go out altogether, or, and I would get paid for that, or I'll go to Station A next door. I mean, I'm Station B. I've sold out. Now I go to Station A and say, hey, let's make a deal. Let me have a couple of your multicast channels. You put my signal on your channel. I work it through your transmitter, and I'll pay you rent. And Station A, who's having some hard times, thinks, found money. Maybe this will work. If, of course, I can clear it with my networks and my program suppliers because I've promised to do HDTV and bit sharing becomes very complex. That's what they think is going to happen. Now, so the remaining channels charge for the leasing. There is also a thought that maybe a broadcaster would take this deal. If you're in the UHF band because they want UHF spectrum, which I'll get into, maybe you'd be willing to go down to the low VHF band. Aha, you say, my God, it's miserable down there. And we know that, and they know that. But what they would do is, well, okay, maybe there's a price at which you'd be willing to go down there, and since you'd have must carry, you'd reach X percent of your market anyway. So maybe you take the money and it's no harm, no foul. Now, if you're the poor off-air television viewer with an antenna who is relying on over-the-air television, you may get shortchanged in that process. But that's at least sort of the economic thinking that's ongoing. Yes, sir. I'm sorry?
You did specify low V.
I did specify low V. Because in most of your major urban markets, the high Vs are still pretty tight. But they now in more rural areas where high Vs, there is some space in high V, they'd probably move it all across. Again, they would be keeping a transmitter on and a signal on, which would provide them the justification to get cable carriage. I don't want to go that far. But essentially what would happen is after all this occurs, and after a year or so this all works out, then the commission would say, okay, what does the spectrum look like? And I would start repacking the band after that. Understand the repacking piece of this is not voluntary. It's the participation in the auction and giving up spectrum that is. Okay, so after you've cleared the spectrum, then they'd go to the supply side and say, all right, Verizon, AT&T, Google, or whomever, how much are you going to charge? How much would you pay? And then the FCC, I love this. This is right off the slide. They consummate the winning offers. That has different connotations to different audiences. But essentially, they would collect the payments from the winners, and they would then turn around and make the payments to the broadcast and repack and reassign, and the remainder of funds go to the Treasury. Aha! So that means I try to up the price to the guys who are going to sell, and I lower the price to you because that means more money goes to the Treasury. And if I'm a good Republican, that makes very good sense. So that's why I'm not so sure this is just a Democrat thing. I think this is a bipartisan thing we all have to look through. Again, I want to make it really clear. This is just one economist at the Commission's personal approach as to how this would all lay out. But he's one of the key guys over there, and I think this is a good way for you to start thinking about where this is going to come down. Now, in a double-sided auction, this all happens all at once. And the same steps and the same process. It gets a little bit more complicated. Okay. So having said that, now you see the policy, you see the economists roaming around. What does the technical and the engineering piece look like here? All right. Let's start from where we were and where we're going. First, pre-DTV transition, we had 2 to 69. The current TV band is channels 2 to 51. We returned channel 52 to 69, which, was auctioned off and sold for wireless broadband, along with some public safety stuff, spectrum 24 megahertz reserved for public safety. What the commission wants to do is to reclaim high UHF band spectrum because it's close to the spectrum that just got sold to AT&T and the wireless folks. It makes it very easy to make equipment across the board for that, and high UHF has good mobile propagation characteristics. So the take essentially channels 31 to 51, and now the remaining television band would be channels 2 to 30. There's a lot of numbers on this, but let me try to explain what this is. Right now, if I take a look at channels 31 to 51, you have 704 full-power TV stations in that band right now. In addition, if I add up the Class A's, the LPTV, and the translators, I have 4,709 6-megahertz entities operating on channels 31 to 51. I now have to pick them up and move them. And I have to move them into, essentially, put 9,000 folks in 9,000 stations in channels 2 to 30. In addition, I also have Land Mobile operating on channels 14 to 20. I now have white space devices that are operating on that may be operating on those frequencies. And in addition, I have wireless microphones, both licensed and unlicensed, operating on those frequencies.
I'm sorry, I put one of these little cartoon things in there. Sorry about that. So, now let's take a close look at essentially, there it is. We take a close look at what happens between channels 2 and 30. Essentially, as I said, I have land mobile sharing, so it, particularly in major markets, there are problems with 14 to 30. In addition, on 2 to 6, they're subject to interference and clearly antenna size problems, and we can talk about the problems with even buying a low VHF antenna in a supermarket, or let's strike that, in a big box retail store today. So in a sense, you're looking at a fairly packed band that will largely be, for our purposes, in terms of being able to operate, anywhere between channel 7 and 30, because low V is going to be problematic. So what we did is, what does all this mean? And we looked at some of the FCC data that has just come out. And it's a large chart, but I just want to refer you, essentially, when the commission said, we think we can get 120 megahertz, and we can get 36 megahertz off the top, what they forgot to do is to count problems on the borders with Mexico and Canada. Once you include the border restrictions, the FCC itself has said, on a nationwide basis, I can only recover 6 megahertz of spectrum nationwide. Not a lot. Well, it would essentially be a channel, let's say channel 51, and I would find spaces to move people around. I'm going to move this a little bit. So they realize that repacking alone isn't going to be a problem, so let's do channel sharing. And I apologize. I'm looking around now. There's mostly engineers in the room, so I'll do this fast. Essentially, when you have right now in a market, you had 8 stations, 6 megahertz, using a total of 48 megahertz of spectrum. Each one has 19.39 megabits per second. What the commission is proposing to do is let's have folks at least double up, use the transmitters. That way, I'll only have to use 24 megahertz of spectrum for broadcasting. Each station would have 9.7 megabits per second, and the facilities must be shared. Now, again, since it's voluntary, all of you guys would probably work out whatever arrangements you had. The commission took some evidence in the record by folks who said they can run two HD stations, two HD channels on one 6 megahertz channel. Now, depending on how you read the data that was submitted to the commission, at best, it says if I am one station owner, I can manipulate my bits with a low bit stream on one and a high bit if I'm showing a football game, and that may be able to work. But one bit stream always suffers. And to say you can have two independent licensees operating on one 6 megahertz channel and both do an HD at the same time is problematic. And we can get into the whole idea of additional compression schemes and some of the multiplexing and snap muxing that goes on, but that really is going to be an issue. Let's just go back again. So essentially what the commission said, well, if I repack and I meet all my treaty obligations, essentially they think that they could probably get 60 megahertz of spectrum if they do some repacking. Now, we took a look at this and we said, well, how would you work it out if you decided to make sure that no one had to go into the low VHF band? Essentially, everyone just stays in the VHF with a U-band, and you try to get 120 megahertz of spectrum. Can you do it? And what we did at MSTV is we ran an analysis, and I just want to refer you to the bottom row. Essentially, out of 1,700 full-power stations, 366 would have to share. And, of course, you have to share with a partner because it takes two to tango, so you double that number in terms of the actual stations that will be participating. But here's the issue. 40% of the markets, you would have to have at least one or more stations share. And if you run your eye along to the number 21, in 21 markets, every station in the market would have to share if you want to get 120 megahertz of spectrum. And essentially, that looks like this. In the little red dots, the little red states and counties, every station would have to share if you wanted to get 120 megahertz of spectrum. That is unlikely to happen. You may have some, you know, smaller stations that may want to do a deal and double up, but your ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, you know, the large WGN in Chicago, the large stations are probably going to have trouble doing that. So what it means is even under a sharing model, you're not going to get the 120 megahertz of spectrum that you think you're going to get. And it's in part because of this, I think the even the administration is saying, ooh, maybe that's not the right number. Maybe we should wait and see how many folks actually volunteer and participate in these auctions. Because if you're trying to get 120, there are a lot more people who are going to have to play in this incentive auction than I think most people realize. Now, we had this past summer an engineering forum. I loved it because we knew we had some issues. And so the FCC set up this engineering forum and workshops on a Friday afternoon in late June. And they were stunned and shocked because all the engineers showed up. Because, frankly, lawyers would be at the beach. You guys work hard. And it really was probably one of the most outstanding things I've ever seen. And my compliments to anyone who was in the room who was there. It really was a engineering tour de force. Whether the government will listen to us or not is another thing. But essentially what we showed was this. First of all, that the channel sharing may not be viable because with two separate licensees, you can't do two HDTV programs. You can't run HDTV on 9.7 megabits per second. And they have completely forgotten about the contractual relationships that you folks may have with your program suppliers. Some of the service is going to get degraded. In addition, whether it's in your barter arrangements or additional programming, you're starting to see advertisements over the next couple of years come in HD. You just simply can't start bit shaving. There will be legal issues associated with that. Moreover, even in the rerun market, the syndicated market is moving to HD. So Andy Sitos, who's the chief technology officer from Fox, made a compelling case that this idea that you can share or force sharing is not going to work. Voluntarily, you know, that's for you guys to decide, but clearly as a policy matter, folks shouldn't be forced to do that. It is clear on a going-forward basis that you'd reduce the number of multicast streams if you forced sharing. And more importantly, we are on the verge of an explosion with new mobile video technology. You saw a presentation, I believe, this morning on this. This type of sharing situation may very well prevent that mobile market from developing and going forward. So we explained that to the commission. We also indicated that at least right now, because folks, the commission had misread some technical data, which seemed to indicate that you could actually get better compression out of current MPEG-2 technology, and therefore you could share. It would be easier. We essentially indicated to them that at this stage of the game, MPEG-2, in terms of further compression has sort of run its course. You can't get, there was a huge improvement in compression in 2009, but that was sort of a one-shot thing, that on a going-forward basis, you're not going to be able to do this. So what does that mean if you want to squeeze more stations into less spectrum? It means ATSC. It means on a going-forward basis, we're going to have to move and improve our compression technologies. That takes time. As we know. Moreover, you end up having to change out every television set in the United States. Yes, those are the sets that people just bought. So that is something that can't be accomplished in 5 years. Depending on the life cycle of a set, there was evidence in the record indicating it may take up to 13 years. So don't expect that you'll be able to squeeze everyone onto fewer channels and continue providing America with the same level of service, because MPEG-2 is not going to improve that much. You're going to have to go to a new system, and that's a new digital transition all over again. One of the thoughts that had come out was, oh, you guys are inefficient because you're high-power, big stick. Maybe if we made you look like a cellular service, we could recover more spectrum. And the answer to that is no. So long as you want to have the same coverage areas and do the same protection, if you're Baltimore, Washington, which is where they want to deal with this, whether you're high tower, big power, or small cellular systems, you're not going to reclaim a whole lot of spectrum. You still can't have the same person using a channel in Baltimore as you do in Washington, even with small cell towers. there will be a strip of interference about 10 to 20 miles wide running somewhere in between the two of those markets. Moreover, very little improvement for an unbelievable cost. Now, cell towers or gap fillers, single frequency networks make sense for that. It does not make sense to get rid of our architecture, supplant it with this architecture, and expect to get a whole lot of spectrum savings out of it. VHF. We made it very clear that very few folks went into the low VH band because of low impulse noise problems. In addition, there was evidence in the record that was put by the antenna manufacturers, and I didn't know this. Large big box stores don't like to supply VHF antennas because they literally take up too much shelf space, and they have problems with that. If you talk to like Antennas Direct or DigiAntenna right now, antenna sales are really starting to take off. They're going through the roof. In fact, we've become part of the over-the-top solution. But right now, putting everyone into the low VHF band would really be the kiss of death. You will not be able to get mobile in low VHF. High VHF won't get you a whole lot in the major markets, which is where they want to get spectrum. And there are some issues. There are some difficulties that have to be overcome with high VHF in mobile. So there are simply practical limitations going back to the VHF band in the digital world that really cannot be overcome. So how do you make sense of this mess? The demand for our spectrum is going to continue and it's going to increase. The spectrum lust, as I refer to it, is going to continue. We, both NAB and MSTV, and I want to give a plug here for Gordon Smith over at NAB, who I think is doing a terrific job representing us on the political side and trying to find a solution. What we have done at this point is to say voluntary is the key. Broadcasters cannot be forced either directly or indirectly into turning in their spectrum or forced to share channels. In addition, so once you get the voluntary piece, the next question becomes, okay, the voluntary piece is there. What about repacking? What happens there? Because as I said, that's not voluntary. So if the commission wants to clear a nationwide block of spectrum, that means not only urban, it means rural. It means everybody. The government has made it clear that they're willing to repay, although it hasn't been put in a law yet, that they would compensate stations to move channels again. That would be covered. But the problem you're going to have there is I don't know at this point and cannot tell you at this point what the repacking model will look like. The FCC is working on something called an OMA, which is oh my. It's an allocation optimization. It's a model or official optimization model, whatever the thing. They are going to put factors into essentially a model that says, okay, for those who decide to stay, when we have to reassign you a channel, what are the principles in which we're going to reassign you? Both MSTV and NAB's fundamental position is if you're going to do any repacking, there can be no loss of service, particularly as it applies to population. Standing here today, I simply do not know what their optimization model is going to look at. It was supposed to be published in September. The commission's run into some issues. We're hoping to see that, you know. Clearly, you have to see that before you decide whether you want to participate in the auction, because you have to know what happens to you if you don't. It would be patently unfair for everyone to say, I'm going to stay as a broadcaster, only to find out that under this optimization model, if I get repacked, I lose service areas. So keeping your service area is the number one issue, at least on the technical side, that we're pushing. It is an issue that MSTV has spent a lot of time and a lot of money on running various models, but at this point there's a little bit of guesswork involved because we don't know how many stations are going to participate, if any, and what that optimization model looks like. What are the factors that the commission is going to consider? So we have no quarrel with issues that are truly voluntary. We want to maintain access to all of our TV digital offerings. In other words, stations should have the right to continue with mobile, additional multicasting, 3D TV, whatever new services that are coming on down the line. We have to compete in that world. The second thing is that we are, well, we don't want to lose access to broadcast TV based on any signal strength degradations, increase in interference, or loss of coverage area. Free TV viewers must continue to receive the beneficiaries of that innovation, which in fact is mobile TV is an example. And we must not be forced out because of spectrum fees. I hit the magic button. Let me leave you with this. There has been this flavor throughout this entire debate, which we are in the process of dispelling. And that is, broadcasting is an old architecture, linear system, and no one watches video in that way anymore. And that is absolutely wrong. If you look at the demands in all the demand curves for mobile broadband going forward, most of it, in fact, I think it's close to 67% of it, is premised on watching video. And if you're watching video, in a lot of instances, it's not a point-to-point system. If you use a point-to-point system, the system generally will crash. A more efficient system is a point-to-multipoint system for the delivery of that kind of video. Who has a point-to-multipoint system? Who's already built it? It's there. So what's the public interest purpose of taking spectrum, wresting it away from broadcasters, going through all this entire auction, years of rulemaking, to send it back out, in which it's very possible that the entity who purchases that spectrum, in order just to meet the system's architecture requirements, creates, yes, a point-to-multipoint system. The better argument is that we are part of the broadband ecosystem. Our architecture is built. The issue is not who owns or what have you. Dell gave a compelling argument in the TV white spaces issue, in which they're putting out product right now that has Wi-Fi, it will have white space, it has a mobile DTV chip in it. The real issue is putting the DTV chip or getting the DTV chip into devices, getting the mobile DTV chip into devices, where the consumer can seamlessly shift between systems, whether it's Wi-Fi, whether it's internet access, if they want to watch the local news live, bang, get the local news live. If they want to watch a ball game live, bang, you get the local news live. The power is in the hands of the consumers. And with that, it's not, the policy shouldn't be to take away spectrum and move it. It really is to move forward with a philosophy of how a consumer model should work. And that's what we're working on in Washington. I hope I haven't eaten up all your time here. No, I haven't. Let me stop. If any folks want to ask questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. Yes, sir. I can hear. I raised three boys. I hear a lot of things.
With a name like Donovan, you must be Catholic, and then we could get into jokes about priests. And
Dominus Verbiscum.
I went to an all-boys Catholic high school in upstate New York.
No, there you go.
The question I've got is the spectrum need is most acute in the largest markets.
Correct.
Especially in the Boston to Washington corridor.
Sure.
I'm living in Atlanta.
Right.
Just to give you an idea. In a large market such as, say, Atlanta, you've got your top-tier stations who are profitable and will survive the changes. But the economists would say there could be a little bit of a shakeout maybe with the second or third-tier stations.
Correct.
I don't want to badmouth anybody, but...
Sure.
I'll just use an example in Atlanta. We've got at least two religious broadcasters. They've got as much right to their channel right now as the ABC affiliate, who's great. Sterling left, okay, but
we also don't want to mess with God either, right? So
right, but the point is that from an economist standpoint, an operation that is living hand to mouth might be more, especially since they're often on UHF assignments.
Yes.
They would be more tempted to say,
correct,
you know, we'll take the cable only option. We need the money.
Yep.
Put the transmitters to rest. The spectrum needs are less acute in the triple-digit markets. They're not going to need the wireless as much, you know, expansion. There's no way we can hybrid this is the point. The spectrum is needed most in the biggest markets. I know I'm repeating myself. But has anybody gone to broadcast groups I mean, I understand the big groups are going to say, no, we don't want to give back a single hertz. But how about some of the ones that are
teetering?
Are any of them making noise that say we would fold at the right price?
It's interesting that you raise that, because the question is not only going to the broadcast groups. There have been conversations that have gone directly to the private investors and the investors holding the notes for those groups, saying, I can get you more money if you... Well, yeah, no, I understand. But the commission has actually made those... There have been discussions going back and forth. That may be true, and it may... And I used to represent the independent TV guys a long time ago. My only question that I have is, I guess, for this audience is twofold. One, will you get enough of those stations who want to turn in to give you enough spectrum that you can run a wireless broadband system? It's not clear to me that you have enough of those folks to do it in the major markets. But secondly, even if you did, if they're trying to clear a nationwide block of spectrum, if suddenly folks in Atlanta or Washington or New York decide to get out of channels 31 to 50, and they say, well, we're going to clear, let's say, 40 to 51, and you're out in a rural area and you're on 51 or 50, you're going to get moved. Now, the government will pay you to relocate you, which is a good thing, but you will be affected by this even if you don't participate in the auction. Yes, sir.
9/11, you know, the big thing was we didn't have enough spectrum, and we couldn't communicate on and on and on and went. And when they did the research, they found out in New York City there were 2,400 channels available that were not used. Now, the question that I have, they're trying to grab all the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been a plan outside of the federal government trying to bolster their treasury? What in the hell are they going to do with it? How many players are out there that are going to use it? Are we going to turn it all over and it's going to sit there? This whole idea of selling spectrum, I think we made the first mistake when we sold the first spectrum auction
right.
for cellular everything. And the cellular people, the big Verizons and other ones, I don't think they got that kind of money anymore. They have spent so much for the spectrum they now have. And, you know, there's been... People have defaulted on the spectrum that they bought. It's been very common.
Mm-hmm. You raise a good question, and we had some problems with the way the commission estimates broadband spectrum demand going forward. There's a long-winded story. It's based out of a model that was produced at the International Telecommunications Union. Cisco's done some modeling. The FCC that chart that I showed you is based on a new FCC model in which they claim, based on existing demand patterns, we're going to have a spectrum shortfall in 2014. Is it political or real? I'll leave that up to you. But it's having a very real effect in Washington, D.C. So whether folks are going to buy spectrum and warehouse it, candidly, they haven't even built out the 700 megahertz spectrum yet. But the idea is that the demand for wireless communications and even non-communications equipment is so great that they're anticipating that there is going to be a shortfall, and that's driving it. There's also another piece to this. Gaining money from spectrum auctions is, of course, important in balancing the budget. But there are a number of policymakers in Washington who don't view it necessarily simply as a tool to get money in the short run. In fact, many of your white space advocates believe that we as a country would be better off if you reserved a chunk of that spectrum that could be used by unlicensed entities with essentially very few rules, because that would create this tremendous rush of new high-tech equipment that would operate in those bands. I've been fighting the white space issue for 6 years. I understand the argument. I'm not so sure I necessarily believe it. When I bought my house, I wanted to know the parameters. I don't want people walking through my backyard. And so I'm not so sure you can build sustainable communication systems without a licensing regime, frankly. But that's what they're pushing right now. And every wireless carrier and every Silicon Valley entity, quote, high-tech innovative entity that you talk to, says there will be a shortfall. Yes, sir.
I know there's been a lot of talk about shift in subscription-based TV viewers back to free over-the-air. mm-hmm. which is continuing to happen and actually right. increasing. There's all this talk about which guys are going to maybe cave in and give up their channels.
Right.
But what about talking about the people who are applying for new channels? What kind of applications are now coming in for that? And as more publicity, as more publicity comes out about the shift back to over the air, how much more interest is there going to be for new potential little guys wanting to get into some of this spectrum?
You raised a couple of issues there. One of these great little hidden known facts is that there is a requirement based on the law that the government was supposed to put out 125 new allocations for TV spectrum. That was in a budget bill 10 years ago. It had been largely ignored, but it's the law. They should be doing it. But everyone has said, oh, no. You're right. One of the problems that we've run against is most of the is data that has been that the government has looked at, largely a lot of it Nielsen data, which shows that the number of over-the-air only homes declines. And, you know, 10 years ago it was 15-20%. You know, some recent numbers I've seen put it somewhere around 9. And the government is saying, well, you know, over-the-air is losing popularity. I think some of that problem is in the is that they're looking at the wrong number. Because that is a house that doesn't have any other connection but an antenna. What they've missed is the folks like my son, who is connected wirelessly to the internet and also connected by wire to the internet, but doesn't subscribe to either basic cable or pay cable. He Netflix his movies, and he watches his local NFL with an antenna. That's not getting picked up in the data. And you know, it's sort of an inconvenient truth for the commission to realize that this curve may be going back up. We've submitted data into the record to explain it. I've been around the commission with antenna manufacturers saying, look it, their sales are going right through the roof. For the first time in 10 years, you can get antennas at Costco and Best Buy, and they're even selling these right as you come in the door, as opposed to, you know, behind the men's room where it was about 5 years ago. It's a hard one to overcome. The better argument, frankly, that it gets their attention a little bit more is mobile TV. Because it's new, it's something. This has become a policy of what's new. Now, for a new station starting out, it's tough for me to assess that because that really is going to vary on a market-to-market basis. I think it's safe to say that policymakers, you know, adding a 12th station in a market versus setting spectrum aside for broadband, I think right now, it's sad but true, the policy would lean towards let's have some spectrum for broadband. I think that's at least where they're looking at right now. Yes, sir.
I could see that when Reed Hunt and the Telecom Act first was hit, they were trying to break the broadcasters.
Absolutely.
And he said in a speech not long ago,
absolutely,
broadcasting is a threat to democracy.
Exactly.
And he sits on the board of Intel.
Correct.
So what pocket is he reaching into? And whose interest is he interested in? And the broadband plan has an act in it where the White House becomes the overseer of permitting in the public initiative section of it.
Mm-hmm.
The executive branch takes
yes,
on zoning.
Right.
So the overreach in this whole thing and the under-the-table money in this at the expense of the public, at the expense of the broadcasters, is outrageous. And why can't we pull the plug on these people?
Should we sensitize the public to what is happening?
I think a lot of this is, I think one of the things with this with the voluntary auction is to see actually how many folks participate in it. If a number of folks don't participate in it, then you're going to hit a policy conundrum in D.C. Because they're expecting a lot of this to go voluntarily, and that will solve their political problem. If it does not, then they're going to have to be faced with the issue of, oh, I've created this rhetoric, this image of demand for more spectrum for the wireless guys, but these guys didn't come up and do it voluntarily. Now what happens? And that's where that fight engages at that point. We're hoping, I think, to some extent, while I think this will be a, you know, there's a bipartisan lust for spectrum, I do think that if there are changes in the House and in the Senate and ultimately in 2012, we may get a more reasonable discussion going. But it's, you know, do not under... it's hard for us sometimes to understand we're not the only guys playing in this space. I mean, you have said there's we have political SWAC. We have the ability to get out to viewers and voters. The other folks who want spectrum, every major carrier in the United States, Google, all the major Silicon Valley companies, they also have their own sort of political throw weight as well. So if this comes to crunch time, it will be a very, very interesting discussion going forward in Washington. I can't comment on this. I do know, however, that having been around when Reed Hunt was chairman, our digital standard was delayed by well over a year because of his desire not to have a standard, which was what Microsoft was espousing at the time. And it took a lot of work and a lot of effort. And very few people give her enough credit. Susan Ness was really the reason why we got a digital TV standard, because she laid in the tracks and did, in my mind, a yeoman's job at getting this thing going. She did a lot of behind-the-scenes work. But you're right. Reed wanted to essentially... Their view... I got Leonard looking at me, so I'll leave it at this. Reed's view of the world is that a communications infrastructure that starts from the top, goes through professional journalists, and down to the masses is wrong. That information about our society shouldn't be distributed that way, but should bubble up from the bottom. Citizen journalism, as you will. And the Internet provides that. So that's why the Commission has opened up a future journalism proceeding. There is a great philosophical debate going on in this country right now as to how information should flow in this country. And this issue is caught up in that entire milieu. And with that, I'm sorry I went over time, but you knew I would, Leonard. Okay. Thank you.